Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 281. And I'm joined this week by Matt Richards. But last week, apparently on the podcast, I said Matt Richardson, which it's not. I want to humbly apologise for that. I felt like a right plum. The reason for it, I think, is because the Pod Bible stuff that I was also talking about in that intro or outro is with Adam Richardson. That's how that happened. But Matt Richards is the new host of Tuesday Night Jaw. And while I'm speaking of Adam Richardson, Pod Bible is putting on a Pod and Mix show at the London Podcast Festival on September 8th at King's Place. And it'll be Adam Richardson's podcast, The Hardest Part of the Ring, putting together a quiz for Matt Richardson and a team of wrestlers, a wrestling quiz of the Tuesday Night Jaw kind of team and gang. So it's wonderfully exciting. You can buy tickets now. I urge you to go there and see if I get confused over the names of the guests once again. This episode, we do talk about wrestling. We talk about gaming. We talk about a lot of stuff, but I don't think it's exclusively for people into wrestling or people into gaming or whatever else. Matt's story is a really interesting one and a really inspiring one because there's a lot of reasons that, I don't know, his outlook on a lot of stuff I think is great, is really positive and really good and can be converted into a lot of other kind of places. I should mention, as ever, we're brought to you by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. That's where you can get all the merch. And patreon.com/ScroobiusPip just had the new poem of the month. So you can go and check that out for $1 for the whole month. And you'll also get a bonus episode down the line and loads of preview stuff. So yeah, that's cool. I'm keeping the intro short still. In the outro, I want to talk to you about wrestling a bit and about the negative effect that recording this podcast had on my life. And in the outro, in fact, I'm going to talk about my number one wish in wrestling right now. I'll tell you all that at the end. But before we get into it, I should mention, if you are a wrestling fan, I've had some amazing previous guests. I've had Will Ospreay, arguably the best wrestler in the world at the moment. I've had Jack Gallagher. I've had Jim Smallman of Progress Wrestling, recently announced leaving Progress Wrestling. That's all on his Twitter if you want to go and find out about that. I've had Eddie Dennis. I've had Chris Jericho. I've had some amazing people. And I've lined up, I was going to leave it for the outro, but I'm going to sit down and chat with Jack Sexsmith. A lot of you will know he's been through hell and back recently, and we're going to have a good chat about it. Yeah, let's get on with the podcast. This is episode 281 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Matt Richards. Right, I'm joined today by Matt Richards. How are you, sir?
I'm actually really well, yeah. I'm
it's good. Exciting. We're in the basement of the book club, which is where I do my club night, We Are Lizards. So I never like to miss a good opportunity for a plug.
No.
That's legit and doesn't seem false. But yeah, we're here to chat about a lot of things, prompted by your new role as the host of Tuesday Night Jaw.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that. But there's loads I want to talk about, but primarily, it's your birthday.
So it is
happy
my birthday. Thank you. I'm like the most un-birthday guy in the world ever.
Yeah.
Like to the point where I deliberately was like, oh yeah, I'll come to London and do this because I'm 31 now as well, so I'm kind of like, I'm over the last important one until 50.
Yeah,
so I'm
like,
I'd rather be doing work and stuff.
I'm exactly the same. I always release something on my birthday, and part of the reason for that was it was a distraction from having to do anything. I'm making it work.
Yeah.
Like, I put Introdiction out, like was the first one. The Introdiction video went up on my birthday, which meant I could spend all day just promoting
exactly.
single
yeah,
and not have to worry about stuff. And then ever since then, it's like I did my the first Distraction Pieces live on my birthday because it's like, well, my mates can come to that. I don't have to have a party then. It doesn't have to be any kind of drama.
We can tie it in, yeah.
But despite that, I've got you a gift. And
okay.
It's a WWE sticker, and I think it's the one everyone wants. It's Vladimir Kozlov clearly just working a rest hold on Triple H that That needs to be turned into a sticker, right? That absolute highlight.
And this is coming from someone who's been in wrestling for 15 years. I'm looking at this image and can't figure out what's meant to be happening.
Yeah, he's just holding his back, really,
now,
isn't
he? Now, as a professional wrestling broadcaster, that looks like a reverse bear hug, but I can't be sure.
Now, as a smart mark...
Yeah.
Triple H's hair's over his face. Yeah. Kozlov, the more inexperienced wrestler, has pushed his head to his back. I reckon Triple H is telling him what we're meant to be doing, because he doesn't really know what he's doing, and Triple H is obviously the ring general.
Or he's just going, I'm absolutely not taking a German suplex off you. Yeah. Not a chance, mate.
But it blew me away that was made into a sticker. What a bizarre moment to memorialise.
I know. It's like I keep seeing all the guys now that are in like NXT and stuff. They'll have the top Trumps cards stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's always like, you always get the ones that look really great, and then you get the ones that you're kind of like, oh, you picked that stock image. Interesting
choice
there, guys.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Well, that's unusual. Well, this obviously is going to be a wrestling-heavy podcast. But before we get into that, because I want to hear your story a bit, but a lot of that comes through wrestling.
Yeah.
But so let's talk, before we get to that, another thing that you're known for and have done for years is hosting at the Insomnia Game Festival. So are you a big gamer? Have you always been a gamer? Where's your game background?
So before I got that job, I would have absolutely sat here and said, oh yeah, I'm a gamer. And then I got that job, and then I realised I'm not a gamer.
It's tough,
like,
isn't it? I think the generation or the evolution of Twitch has made a lot of people realise how they're not gamers.
Yeah.
Because there's like, oh, like when I had Daniel Attack on the podcast once, we were talking about Destiny, and I was doing a podcast on the new one, and I clocked about 30, 40 hours. And Dan was like, yeah, I'm not really, Destiny's not one of my main games. I've got about 1500 hours on it. I was like, and that's not one of your main games.
No. So this is confession time. So the only thing that I really play these days is, like, if anyone knows me, they know how obsessed I am with Football Manager.
Yeah.
So my current record on a Football Manager game is 48,000 hours.
Wow.
On FM 2010, because I played that game for 9 years.
Yeah.
So I had it when it came out, and I literally just
green,
like,
box.
Yes, greeny bluey.
Bluey box. The red one was the one I got into really massively, which was early. I think that was early 2000s was the red box.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'm like, an
addictive game, right?
Oh, it's horrendous. But it's kind of nice because most things in video games, it has a subculture within a subculture.
Yeah.
So I now get people coming up to me going like, oh, have you heard of this 17-year-old Belgian striker that plays in the third division in Belgium? Or like, and I love it because it's great. And
you're always looking for the new Cherno Samba.
Exactly. And so my friend Tony Jameson, who's a stand-up comic, got famous from doing the Football Manager stand-up show.
Right.
He turned it into a book and a documentary, which Tony's in, because he did 50 years with Blythe Spartans. And like he did the documentary with it.
Wow.
And Tony's actually a mate of Jim's.
Yeah.
So I went to watch Tony's stand-up show, got introduced to him, and we nerd out occasionally. And now it's a weird position because Tony loves wrestling. So Tony comes to talk to me about wrestling and CrossFit. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, you're the guy that knows who Freddie Adu is and treats him with the love and respect. But now you're coming into my world. Because I think in anything that we do, because I think we all move in similar circles.
Yeah.
It's like, have you ever heard the saying about, like, every rapper wants to be an NBA player, every other NBA player wants to be a rapper?
It's kind of like that
in, like, wrestling. Like, every other comic wants to be a wrestler or vice versa. And you see all this crossover.
Music and acting is one that I found. The reason my route into acting felt somewhat fast-tracked was I'd met so many actors who were into my music and become friends with them and got just such great advice from Gunning.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it is. Wrestling and gaming... There's a massive crossover because they're both quite nerdy.
Yes.
Quite white at times. Yeah. Again, that's thankfully changing across all balls. Quite male for a long time. Again, changing and evolving.
One of the biggest changes, though, is being Austin Creed, Xavier Woods, and Up, Up, Down, Down. We actually had Austin on our stage last year at Insomnia because it was when they had the NXT tapings there.
Yeah.
And he came and played Fortnite with a good friend of mine, Grant Hines, who's also a YouTuber.
Yeah.
And it was wicked. Like, it was so cool to have him there because he was absolutely there in the capacity of gamer. There was no wrestler, there was no, I'm, you know, part of the New Day. It was just gaming. And it was really, really lovely to have someone that's so passionate about something that's known for something else. And I think he's really helped that that community within his locker room now. Because, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know about everyone else, but I love Up, Up, Down, Down. I mean, admittedly, it really winds me up because I know how good Gallagher is on UFC.
Right,
so,
right, yeah.
A little story for you about that. He, when he got married, we all stayed in, like, this country house for a few days, and we were playing video games, and no one beat him at UFC the whole weekend.
Oh, mate, I'm going to have to challenge him at some point. Every time a new one comes out, I do an open challenge. I give out my Xbox or PlayStation
be careful, though.
ID, and then I do an open challenge. And my normal thing is, you pick your fighter, I will pick one of their iconic rivals and win in the style of that rival. Because that's the thing, I guarantee that's what Jack does too, because if you're a nerd for it, you will fight in the style of that wrestler. Because again, there's certain things that if you're good at the ground game, whoever you choose, you might, if you can get it to the ground, you might be able to dominate. Whereas I remember having an online one, it was with my mate Sam actually, and it was Diaz. He chose Connor, so I chose Nate Diaz.
Beautiful.
And he was lighting me up. And literally, it went exactly like the fight, because I didn't get knocked out. He gassed, and I knocked him down and then choked him out. And he was like, particularly as he was on his mic as well, and being all cocky, he's like, yes, I've got you, do this. I was like...
But there's that tie-in, though. It's narrative, right? Because this is what we all kind of like strive for. Video games, you want a game that you can get immersed in into the story. Yeah. Fighting's the same, you know, and wrestling's exactly the same. And I think that's what kind of, if you're really, and I don't mean this in a gatekeeping way, but I mean, if you're a really fan of them things, that's the stuff that keeps getting you coming back.
Yeah.
And like, I absolutely, I got brought up watching boxing and MMA before wrestling. Because my granddad was a big boxing fan, and he'd tell me about all the old fights and stuff like that. And from a part of South Wales was a guy called Johnny Owens. There's actually a statue of him in Merthyr Tydfil. Brilliant. So like, that was ingrained in my brain of like fighting, but stories. It was that thing of like, it's telling stories. And that's kind of how, even my dad now, he's like, he kind of thinks wrestling's a bit, you know, it's a bit hokey and whatever, but he loves it when I show him stuff where it's got that big fight feel or that narrative to it.
And when they can really tell a story swiftly and effectively, it's I mean, a fight I've been banging on about this week. I was at Riptide last weekend, and Cara Noir, mystery opponent of Pac.
Yeah.
And that was exciting in itself because they're both really good, but the fact that they had no history and they told a story in that match was absolutely fantastic. Because to be honest, Pac could just go about just doing a tour of glory, essentially. He doesn't have to tell stories. He can go and do all his amazing flips. I liked Neville, but I wasn't like mad about him. I was honestly hair standing on end as he was on the floor next to me, because he's actually there, because he looks like an action figure. So,
and then you've got Cara on the other side of that, who's this like perfect storm of theatrics and physicality, because he's got this Black Swan character that's so captivating and it engrosses you, but the human being behind the character is one of the most talented mixed martial arts like, you know, practitioners that is in pro wrestling. And he is a once in a lifetime performer in that sense of, because for a long time, I remember when he was black belt Tom Dawkins, I think his old name used to be. And he used to do all these sort of like martial arts kicks and have this ballet thing. And I remember everyone kind of felt he was this oddity. And then the Cara Noir character just burst into life.
It blew me away the first time I saw him live, because I'd heard all about this entrance. And if it's someone that's accessible, I'll try not to watch on YouTube and stuff like that, because it's a bit of a spoiler. Mm. So it's not going to quite translate as it would in the room. So I'd held off, and his entrance was as amazing as I'd expected, but I didn't expect that hard-hitting in-ring. I hadn't heard about that. I'd immediately messaged a Jim Smallman and said it was like an 80s body swap
a Freaky Friday type movie, which weirdly you two talked about when he was on Cheers. But and Glenn Joseph has taken over Matt Riddle.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. He's got all of the pomp and circumstance of Glenn, but then he's built like he's carved out of granite. Yeah. And then, yeah.
And what a great place Riptide is as well, man. I love them guys. I did two shows for them when they were transitioning ring announcers to Rose, who does it now. And I just absolutely adored it. It's Brighton, isn't it? You know,
it's wonderful.
Nothing like it.
It really surprised me as well, because that was one where they'd hit me up a few times and sent me a few links to a few of their shows, and they're shot amazingly.
Mm.
And it was even more amazing to walk in there, because what they managed to get atmosphere-wise and on camera in essentially a community hall
kind of thing.
It's not like turning up at the ballroom.
No,
and it's the ballroom.
No,
it's this exciting.
Yeah.
This, you turn up, you're like, all right, I'd expect there to be a jumble sale on tomorrow and things like that. But they get, particularly on camera and in the room, just this amazing atmosphere.
So, I don't know if you found it funny, but we'll make sure the link goes out to the match and watch how it's shot, because the way they shoot it is unbelievably original.
Yeah.
But it's really funny when you're the person they're filming, because especially as a ring announcer, because I'm stood in the middle of the ring and I'm doing my bits and pieces. And I even said at one point, I was like, the last time I was filmed like this and filmed this often was when I was on Crime Watch. Because you just feel like, you know, is this true crimes investigation? Is it like panning around your face multiple times? And I was just, as an honorary Northerner, I was a bit nervous. I was like, oh.
It's finding those things that makes them stand out, right? It makes it, it's what I was really pleased as soon as that Cara Noir match finished, because not to give any spoilers, but at the end, they put over somebody other people absolutely excelling on that roster. Mm. They get them in there. So it's not just, here's an import.
Yes.
You know, they build the story. They get the rest of somebody other standouts over. And as soon as it finished, I was walking to the train station with my missus and my mate Adam. And the first thing I said was, they've got to put this up online for free. Because it's what Progress did with the last Devitt match and things like that, and this match goes up free, and then it gets the atmosphere across and everything, and this feels like Riptide's version of that. And it's got that huge name, that undeniably one of the best in the world in pack, and then it's got this guy that, even if you're outside of kind of the South, and you know, South West as well, we've wrestled in Wales and stuff like that, but even if you're outside of the South, you're not going to be that familiar with him, or you may not be. So this feels like just a world platform for
and that, you know, we me and Jim spoke about it on that Tuesday Night Jaw, about that chapter 13 and how that now is, I think I described it as the Sex Pistols gig in Manchester in the 70s, in the sense 100%. That everyone will lie and say they were there when in reality there was only few, but it changed the scene, or it changed the perception of the scene. And I spoke from my point of view. I was, at that point, I was still up north, and I was part of that very like gritty northern wrestling scene where like, oh no, we're men, or we're women, and we fight like we've been down the pits and all that. Yeah. And then we saw that, and we kind of went, oh, they're doing something special there.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way that's going to be with Riptide.
It's weird, isn't it? Because there's such a unity, but also still those slight rivalries and loyalties, the football team style loyalties. Yeah. Like, I had people tweeting me about ICW as soon as I started going to Progress.
Yeah.
And I felt, no, I'm a Progress guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'm like, it looks amazing. It's actually fantastic. But there is that slight, and you get that with any promotion you post about it. They'll be like, well, you should really come and see OTT if you want real rest. It's like, it looks amazing too.
Yeah,
but they can all be good.
We had it with the we did a couple of pre-shows up north with Progress this weekend. In Newcastle, the company is called North, and that was amazing. Yes. And they're awesome. They're really, really good lads, and I'm really excited about that. But Manchester was our opportunity, which is something I've been like moaning at Jim for years to have. And we had two lads called Sonny Durson and Luke Jacobs.
Yes.
And I was so proud of them, because they had a match that was theirs and was distinctly like, hey, this is what we do in Manchester, which usually involves getting your teeth kicked down your throat, but it's what we like. So, and I was so happy with how that came across, because I think sometimes when you're in a scene, it's like music, like any form of entertainment, where something gets popular, people try to replicate rather than trying to create. And I think them lads really showed their style. And then you've got, I think Son is 26.
Oh, yeah, he's someone 18. That I've only heard of because yourself and Chris Brooker have been raving about him for a while now. So,
but we've got another, like Luke, like I said, he's 18. He's got his partner's a lad called Ethan Allen, who's 17.
Yeah.
And then we've got between, I'd say, 8 and 10 girls, guys, who are just unreal. But I saw Sam Gradwell, who's on the NXT UK roster, make a really, really good point on Twitter this week about sometimes you always want the shot and you want to have the platform to show how good you are, but you forget about the hard work that goes into being ready for that. And he was like, that was them two guys being ready for that moment.
Yeah.
You know, but if they hadn't gone on that journey of being the guys that everyone's sort of bubbling about and talking about here and being ready for that opportunity, they wouldn't have done as well. And I think
you can think you're ready because of your hunger and because
especially
of your thirst
18.
And you're not. Yeah, yeah, there's loads I look back now and go, God, I was shit for years. Oh, like music and things like that. There's so many things I remember from gigs and cringy stuff that it's like, well, that was my time to be shit. And then by the time I had an audience, I'd done it an awful lot.
Oh, man, so there's some of the Tuesday Night Jaw archives that I still hate because I'm like, oh, I was such an idiot. And that was like 2 years ago, you know? And
I love it. I love it. But it is an interesting one. So, I mean, on the kind of, on the talk of that Manchester Sex Pistols gig that everyone was there. I mean, you don't want to choose who was the Mick Hucknall, but it kind of links, I think, into your time as a wrestler, because I think there's a lot of people who you worked with, but because it's an interesting one, because a lot of people will know you as a ring announcer or as a commentator, but some might not know your time as a wrestler, and you kind of were there, not to put words in your mouth, but it must feel at times a little heartbreaking timing, because you were there when the ground was being laid and not there when trees have grown.
I'm not trying to be like this humble, you know, down to earth person, but wasn't our job.
Yeah.
You can't have a Coliseum if you don't lay foundations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was our job. We laid foundations, you know. And for me, like, I look at certain people that I came through with 15 years ago who are still wrestling and are some of the best wrestlers in the country, and they missed their opportunity. So for me, I look at it a different way and going, that wasn't what I was meant to do. What I'm doing now is what I was meant to do, but I wouldn't be where I am now if I hadn't gone through it.
Yeah,
you know, completely. And because even when we were... So I came through with Sam Bailey, who's one of my best mates, a guy called CJ Banks.
His match with Cara Noir is also available online for free, I think, and it's meant to be absolutely amazing. I've not watched it yet, but I've heard it's one of the classics.
You've got him, you've got CJ Banks, Danny Hope, Joey Hayes, a guy called Damon Lee as well. There's like a few of us from that Wigan scene, which makes us all sound like we were in the snake pit, but we weren't that good. And when we came in, we didn't know what British wrestling was. I remember my first ever British wrestling match was watching Robbie Brookside versus Johnny Kidd in a World Sports style match. And I was 16 and I'd never seen it. I'd never seen that style of wrestling. So I was already training and wrestling before it. So we were copying, you know, early Ring of Honor or early Indies, American Indie stuff, because we didn't have anyone to show us what to do. So we kind of created a British version of that. And you go back and watch it now and it's a bit, and you're going, oh, that's a bit hokey. But we didn't have anyone leading us. Later, we had people like Mikey Whiplash come in and try and help us. And we did have people like Brookside who would dip in and out. But it was our job to sort of try and make something there. And then the generation after us, which was Jack Gallagher, Zach Gibson, James Drake, you know, Crater from World of Sport, they all came in and kind of just took it to another level.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, because I was actually... So Zach Gibson's first ever match in Future Shock was on my team at the 5th anniversary show.
Right.
And I remember I was team captain, quote unquote. And I remember in that match, because I've told the story a few times, but the first time I ever saw Zach Gibson wrestle, I thought he was the worst wrestler I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Like, and that is not a joke. I thought he was the absolute drizzling. And it was Sam Bailey was like, nah, trust me, he's going to be good. So I hadn't seen him for a year or two, and he's on my team. Like, comes in, tags him in, he does his bit, and I went, oh, bloody hell, he's got really good, hasn't he?
He's developed.
And it was kind of around that period of time where I was like 21, and I just had this moment of just like clarity where I was like, I'm never going to be the level that I think I need to be, so I need to do something else. And I took 2 or 3 years out, moved down south for a bit, and then I've told the story again of what happened and why I came back. But I think that was an important moment for me to have a be really honest with yourself and think, if I'm not contributing to the highest level, then I'm not contributing.
Yeah, it's finding your place in any industry. It's weird. I spoke about this with Mark Goddard, who I think is the best MMA ref in the world, arguably. And I was saying to him, I had a really weird breakthrough because I rolled a bit. I did a bit of BJJ. I went on some reffing and judging courses and all this. And all of it, I realised, all of it, rather than equip me for anything special, it made me enjoy watching it more.
Yeah.
And I realised that in MMA, my role is fan.
Yeah.
And it genuinely is. I'm really good at analysing and watching.
Yeah.
My girlfriend rolls her eyes if she watches with me because I'll have such smugness on my face as I say something, and then 2 seconds later, the commentator says it. And there'll be such a pride, but I'll be like, no, that's because I'm a very good fan. I've been on the mats, I've done a bit of stand-up, I've done the courses, I've done this to qualify me to sit in my living room and really enjoy MMA.
Bailey said something to me once, and it's really funny because we were playing five-a-side football, and it was during like when I was really fat at one point. Which just sounds like my Alan Partridge moment. So we're playing footy, and it's five-a-side, seven-a-side, and my brain is knowing exactly where I need to be, but my body isn't. And he was like, if you were as good as your brain is figuring out things, you'd be an amazing football player. And I think that kind of is a little thing with wrestling. I think the reason why I picked up commentary so good is because I understand the bare basics of how to put a match together, how to tell stories and structure. And then add on that I know the guys and girls in the scene really, really well. I know their characters. I know their matches. That I think I'm very fortunate in that sense that I do have a little bit of a leg up for everyone else, because the only real issue with ring announcing and commentary in this country is that it is behind the level of wrestling, because we don't have anyone who's leading. There's no one who's telling us. I'm very fortunate now that I have a little bit of a communication line from bigger companies that I pick up stuff and I learn, and I can help, you know, tell other people. It's the same with Glenn in that situation, you know, because he's with NXT UK and he's always learning. So when Glenn comes back after a PC week or a show week, I'm like, tell me everything. So I do think there needs to be a little bit of a change in that, especially with ring announcers, because they've always been the jobs. It's kind of like when you're a kid and it's like, oh, who wants to go in goal? Because no one wants to go in goal. It's kind of like, oh, well, you weren't a wrestler, so do you want to ring announce or commentate? And I feel like we need to have a little bit of structure put in place. But
yeah, or make all the roles aspirational roles and make them something to aim to be absolutely amazing at, rather than it be, as I said, I couldn't do that, therefore this. It's the same in, it's one of the things kind of every industry I've been involved in, I've tried to get on as many sides of it as possible, as much as anything, to have that understanding. So touring, I've driven for mates tours, I've tour managed for mates tours, and most of those were after I'd had my own tours. It was in time off in between tours to get that greater understanding, to know, and also to have the respect for those roles, to know that when I'm paying a tour manager, it's because he's got a really hard job, and it's something that, quite frankly, I don't want to do. Yep. I would rather pay him to do that, and you know, he's got that excellence there. So,
and again, I've done everything in wrestling. I've built rings, I've refereed, I've commentated, I've ring announced, I've wrestled, I've sold merch. I've not really promoted, but I've helped with promoting, I've helped with booking. I've literally done everything, and it makes me respect everyone in them roles, and it's. I do feel like I'm not one of them old school guys that's like, oh, you know, you need to go to the dojo and be sweeping floors and stuff like that. But I think at the very least, you should have experience with building a ring, because, again, it's where you work. This is the thing that's going to keep you safe or safer. And if it breaks, you need to know how to fix it, because you don't want to get hurt. And I think it's a great learning curve for you to go and set rings up. And also, it's a really good indication to everyone that you want to be there. There's that intention of like, hey, like I just want to be part of this. And I think that's what's really nice. It's the reason why I had Chris Sharp on my first week.
He is
the guy that gets up at 4:30 in the morning. He's like, all right, guys, let's go get the day. And he's like picking everyone else up and encouraging. He's building the rings. He's planning the matches with everyone. Yeah. He's the one that come around and go, do you want a cup of tea? Do you want this? And like, you know, that guy's got an incredible career. He's worked for every major American company in the world. He's trained under some of the best in the world. And he's a very capable wrestler as well.
Yeah.
I think on the podcast, he downplayed how good of a wrestler he is.
I've been
to training with him. The dude can do everything that the best wrestlers can do. But again, he found his place in wrestling, which was being a referee. And now, you know, he lives in this country with his amazing wife after struggling for so long, working his dream job. And I think that's such a really good example to younger people who want to come in, that again, it's if you want to be part of this and you have a skill set or a skill that can make you good at it, then the world's your oyster, really.
Yeah, and I think one of the problems that we have a lot of time is that we like to quickly dismiss or the whole chuck the baby out with the bathwater type thing is because you can look at the old way wrestling was and how often the trainers would treat the trainees like shit and it'd be harsh. And you can look at that and go, that's not right. And I'd agree with that. But they were doing it for a reason and there's something in it. And the translation of that is, as you said, like ring crew. From my brief time of going to Progress, I remember Candy Floss being ring crew, William Evatt, OJMO being ring crew, Big T Justice being the least discreet ring crew member ever because he's like
all 6'9"
taller than the ring.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's just here to help, is he?
Yeah.
And things like that. And these are all people that have gone on to gain their experience and to do great things in wrestling, and all of them at different levels at the moment.
Yeah, man.
And that's where it's key. You don't have to be treating people like shit, but you can still have these humbling experiences and these learning experiences where you're right there.
And we tell, you know, a lot of the trainees up in Manchester and up north a lot. You know, when I first started training, it was like 15. I literally just turned 15, and second ever training session was essentially a boot camp. And I remember that we did all this like physical activity that was ridiculous for a 15-year-old to do. And I was taking bumps in the ring, bumping over and over again. And I just bumped, stuck my head out the side of the ring, threw up and carried on bumping. And I was known as Sick Boy for like a year and a half before it. And like looking back now, I'm like, that's, you know, because I still had a lot of people are bringing me through in that old, we don't want you to be here because this is a closed door. Yeah. Like, the only way you will be here is if you grit your teeth and you get through this.
I mean, there was mistakenly a lot of that in CrossFit as well. Yeah, you mentioned CrossFit earlier, how that was, we're going to make you throw up and all things like that. And thankfully, the people CrossFit Chesley Street and then Matt Everett, who's one of the main guys in CrossFit, they're the people I've met and got advice off. It's Sam at CrossFit Chesley Street, who's trained me from day one, and Matt, who's kind of given some guidance. They're the ones who are like, nah, it's about community and it's about a positive thing, and it's not about this work until you collapse or work until you throw up or any of that kind of. But it weirdly, it makes me think of we were saying before about finding what your mind is right for.
Yeah.
So the fact is, if your mind is better at wrestling than your body is capable of being, then maybe you should be a trainer or a commentator or things like this. But I had on one of my CrossFit things, I'd started going to this place that was, it's kind of a Ninja Warrior training place. And he was like, do you want to go on the show? I'm like, no, just want to train. Because again, on all these things, I'm not into the needing this end product. It's like, no, I just want to train. And there, I was really good. He loved it because anything he'd teach me, he'd do it. I'd pause for a bit and just get it all clear in my head, and then I'd be able to do it.
Yeah.
Except for the salmon ladder. Okay. He got me on the salmon ladder because it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And he was saying, it's killing me because every time you're going and trying, you're failing, and then you're looking at it and trying to make it make sense. Yeah. It's like, this is the one thing where it's not going to make sense. And me being a stubborn prick, I've now built a salmon ladder in my back garden, I've had to defeat it. But it was one of those things where I was like, right, this is one that
Do you want me to make you feel better?
Go on.
I've seen James Drake fail on a salmon ladder.
Yeah.
Because he can't do it.
And it doesn't make any sense.
He's a professional athlete.
You're pushing off of nothing and you're doing this. And I ended up getting it and getting decent. But weirdly, on the salmon ladder front, on the one I've got at home, I was using these kind of hard kendo sticks as the beam. And for anyone who doesn't know, a salmon ladder, essentially, it's two poles. So if you think the width of how pull-up bars would be, and there's kind of ledges coming out of them, and you put a pole in it, and then you jump up onto the next one, but your feet aren't on the ground.
Yeah.
So I'd got all right at it, and my mate Chris was round, and he was like, "Oh, show me," and I did it, and I was like, "It's because I was trying to teach him," and the way I was taught is you do a few kind of practice ones in the bracket.
Yeah.
Before trying to go up to the next one to get the confidence. So you do a few bang, this is all right, I'm controlling it, and then you go and do it. And I did it, and it snapped. And I fell on my ass. It didn't hurt. I just felt a bit silly.
Yeah.
But because that exercise is 99% psychological, I've not been able to get good at it since. I've not been able to get back to it. And it's my plan. Now the weather's nice, I'm going to get back on it. But it's interesting, those small bits. So I guess the point of I'm trying to make there is that it's not to say, oh, as soon as I have a challenge, I need to change my career path. Mm-hmm. There's things you can overcome despite how your mind works. But as you said, if you've been doing it a while and you feel that you're not going to progress to the level you'd like to, your two choices are do it to just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Don't have that ambition or goal. Just do it for doing it. Or switch to something that you can see longevity and progression and improvement.
I think it's just being honest with yourself. And I think, ironically, one of my biggest criticisms is that I criticise myself too much, which sounds like the biggest oxymoron in the world. But then at the same time, I'm kind of thankful that I have that, because I do feel that I'm capable of removing my ego from the situation.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't have an ego. It's because everyone has an ego. And don't think that I don't sit there and fantasize about stuff and think, wouldn't it be amazing if I could do this? But again, it's that thing of, I think, again, I'm fortunate because I had this moment of clarity and then made a decision. And then I've been very lucky that I've had moments that have only ever made me want to continue doing this, because I would have never had them moments again. I would have never been, I'd have never been part of a show in Wembley Arena if I carried on wrestling. I'd have never been in a ring with WWE wrestlers versus New Japan wrestlers. I'd have never been on shows in front of thousands of people. And I've been part of this, a tiny small piece of it, but I've been part of it. And if I was still, you know, this skinny idiot in pleather trousers doing flips to the outside of the ring, I'd have never had them moments.
Yeah.
And not only did I have them moments, but I deserve to be there as well.
Yeah.
So I'm really thankful for that. And I do feel like it's one of my favorite things in wrestling is when you see that person have the light bulb moment. They either have the match, the moment, the whatever it is, and you just see it in their head and the light just goes on.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. It's really cool.
I love it. I think one of the luckiest things anyone can have, and a lot of people argue against luck and hard work because they feel luck. I saw Mike Bithell, who's a game designer as well, was talking about this on Twitter recently. And he was saying, you can acknowledge luck and still be hardworking. Yep. These two things come hand in hand. Shit. It's not saying, oh, I'm here just purely on luck. But you can also acknowledge that luck has part of it. But I think if you're lucky enough to do one thing that you couldn't have dreamt of, it then makes everything a possibility.
That's it. If
you've done that ring announcing with WWE and New Japan, you know, pretty strong style against the Elite, if you've done that, then it's realistic to go, well, I could commentate at Wembley, I could commentate at Madison Square Garden, I could do, you know, all these things. Because that thing you've done was not imaginable. That was something that if you'd sat down 5 years ago, you're going, well, that can never happen.
So I think the thing with that particular story and the Elite versus British Strong Style is I think I was at Fight Club for, I think it was under a year. I don't even think I was there a year. And when I came into the company, it was when the company was just going on its upward arc. So the now infamous Zack Sabre Jr. versus Travis Banks match, which...
Yes.
Alone saying out loud is crazy, was the match that really started Trav's momentum, which then in turn led to the company taken an upward swing. But we were getting, we were struggling to get 250 people in a place called Fiction in Wolverhampton,
yeah,
which was just a little sweatbox in Wolves. But then the Trav story started picking up steam, and we did the amazing moment where we did Pete versus Trav, and Trav beats Pete finally for the Fight Club Pro Championship.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah,
one
yeah.
of the, like, people are crying, and it's like, it's amazing, this incredible moment. We'd only really just come off the back of that when they decided to take the plunge on doing the first ever Dream Tag Invitational. And having, so we went from 250 people to 1,500 people. And it was the, again, it's that perfect storm of, we had a main event of British Strong Style versus the Elite, straight, pretty much straight off the back of the first NXT UK takeover.
Yeah.
So where Pete, Tyler, Trent started to get big, and we had people like Pentagon Jr., we had Ray Phoenix on there, and we had like a mixture of people like Angelico and Jack Evans mixed with our guys and girls in there. Yeah. And it was just this, the right moment. But even that show, it's funny because we were running, I think, an hour behind. And it was this sweaty, hot banqueting hall in Wolverhampton. And the owners hated us, like, despised us. And it was just really stressful. It was horrible. And I remember we had to take two breaks, and one of the breaks was 45 minutes. And I had to go back out in front of that audience who were just pissed off. And, like, I was pissed off. And again, like, I had to, you know, do my job and get them up for it. And they all come up for the main event, and the British Strong Style music hits, and there's just this explosion. And it was just that moment where I was just like, I need to stop worrying about everything. Just do this thing.
It's,
and then
just, yeah.
And then it's now become the moment that a lot of British wrestling fans go, that was my first indie show, because I saw Pete, Tyler, Trent, and Kenny Omega in the box put on, and I wanted to come to it. And they were like, now
it's,
in their
it's
head,
the it's one
ingrained.
Indie DVD I've bought.
Yeah.
It's literally, I couldn't be there, but I was watching it all on Twitter and stuff. And I was like, well, I'm ordering that as soon as it came through. And I literally just sat in my living room as soon as it arrived and got through the lot.
Go back and watch me during the main event, because I'm so in my own head about it. Because I, not so much repeating that, because I've obviously known Pete, Tyler and Trent for years, despite only working for Fight Club in recent years. But like, I'm so in my head as I'm just about to announce New Japan, because everyone's got this idea that, like, oh, Matt's a really good ring announcer. I'm terrible. I'm not as bad as Jim Smallman, who is the worst ring announcer in the world. But I get proper into my head, and like, I'm just about to introduce him, and my brain goes, yeah, mate, you're just about to introduce Kenny Omega. And I'm like, I know, shut up. I'm trying to think of what they're going to do the introduction.
You need to do it.
So, yeah, you just see me sweating in the corner going, oh, have I said the name right? So.
I love it. Well, we need to get on to Tuesday Night Jaw, but,
yes.
But this kind of brings us to it in a nice way, because you mentioned NXT UK there, and weirdly on Twitter today, I was kind of I was arguing with someone and then apologising with them for the fact that I just have a more positive outlook than a lot of the British internet wrestling community. Because my point was, I'd done this post about the Cara Noir match, and I've said that hopefully this and his progress debut put him on the radar of NXT UK, NXT, AEW, and everyone in Japan.
Yeah.
And someone said, I agree on all the rest, but I hope he doesn't go to NXT UK. And I was like, right, why? It's amazing. The Imperium stuff versus British Strong Style is amazing. Partly the reason NXT UK was the first one that came to mind is the Imperium entrance was perfect from the first ever attempt at it. It just looks amazing, so you can imagine the Cara Noir one. I think Devlin on there is doing amazing, so on and so forth. There's tons of great stuff. And the point I kind of made was, so many of these things, it's all about how you, from what perspective you approach it. So if you approach NXT UK comparing it to you actually being there at an indie show, it's going to feel very differently. It's a weekly show. It's not just, here's our once a month, our once every 2 months. If you, however, and this isn't me being negative, if you compare it to WWE main roster, my God, it's far more aimed at me than the main roster is. So it's all about these perspectives, and it made me think of the birth of Tuesday Night Jaw was the fact that Jim wanted to do a show that was positive, and not just positive about the WWE. It's not some bias thing. Positive about ICW, about Attack, about Fight Club Pro, about wrestling, and again, all Japan stuff, and old stuff, just being excited about it rather than moaning about wrestling, which is really common on the internet and on podcasts.
I think it's that thing of, like, you know, like I love hip hop, and it's that thing of when you say you love hip hop, people kind of do that thing of like, oh, what do you like? Do you like Drake or Skepta? And it's like, well yeah. But that doesn't mean that I don't like people like, you know, your boys, Sage Francis and Dolan. I love that, but I also love a banger. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I want to listen to 50 Cent or G-Unit, but that doesn't mean that...
Genuinely, just across the room from where we are now, I had someone take me aside after my set once, because they'd come as a fan of my music.
Yeah.
So they were probably expecting to hear Sage and Dolan and stuff like that. But I'm DJing at 1 o'clock in a sweaty club. Exactly. I want to play Anti Up. I want to play Simon Says. I want to play rowdy shit.
Yeah,
I don't want to play intellectual hip hop in that situation. So, but this person was exactly that. We're like, this isn't what I expected at all. I'm like, cool, I'm wasted. So we're just gonna have to have this discussion another time.
But then it's the same thing of like, so you got like Dead Press.
Yeah.
And when that song comes on, everyone loses their mind. Yeah, that's one of the most politically driven songs in the world ever. Now it's on a car advert for a Skoda or whatever it is.
But that's
NXT UK.
Sound of the Police.
Yeah.
This club banger that's about plantations and the overseer to officer transitions.
Yeah.
Hugely political, but everyone... Whoop,
exactly. And that's NXT UK. It's this thing of you've got guys that have... come from a background of grinding and having this really gritty indie style and now are being put in front of a mainstream audience. And it's not to a detriment to their abilities and their talents, because you've got to keep in mind that what a mainstream audience wants is so different to a real big, you know, like, oh, real, I'm a real fan, quote unquote, real fan, because it doesn't translate. And as someone who loves wrestling, and as someone who loves 90s All Japan wrestling, I love Misawa and Kobashi and Kawada, but having to explain to Sandra, 35, from Essex, who's brought her two children to a WWE show, having to try and explain why two men are just standing there, walloping each other in the face and ushering each other on...
Yeah.
That would take me, well, sit down and let me tell you about 30 years of wrestling history. Sometimes this stuff doesn't translate to a mainstream audience, but it doesn't mean that then people aren't talented and the product isn't good.
And be aware how low the threshold is for a mainstream audience.
Yeah.
There's not loads of people. I remember being at Brixton for Progress and the woman next was, because that's where they've gone from 700 to 1,500 or a couple of thousand. Yeah. I'm not sure what it was. And this, as soon as Zack Sabre Jr. came out, this one was, oh, this is so boring.
Mm-hmm.
So that's because you've gone slightly, a tiny bit more mainstream than 700 people.
Yeah.
So that's the threshold that we're looking at.
Yeah.
And it just happens that small amount of very vocal on social media, and quite fairly and rightfully.
Yeah. And it's
that's the thing.
There's a choice out there, though. Because Zack Sabre Jr. is absolutely one of the best wrestlers in the world, and I absolutely adore him, and I have for years. Yeah. I've always been one of his biggest fans, because he stuck to the thing that he was good at and he stuck to the thing that he loved, and now he's just wrestled in Texas and he's wrestling in the Tokyo Dome and he's done all these incredible stuff because he stayed true to himself, as well as being one of the funniest people on the mic in the world ever.
Yeah.
But this is the thing, it's like, I don't know why people focus on, oh, well, I really hate this, when there's an infinite amount of stuff you can love.
100%. And that's it. The point here is not to lie about stuff or to rose tint or to gloss over anything, but there's people, again, if we use a main roster as an example, there's wrestlers on the main roster who aren't to my taste.
No.
But there's also Kevin Owens, who I could watch 3 hours of.
Yeah.
And 3 hours of wrestling is tough. That's one of my issues with some of the main roster. But I could watch him for 3 hours. And there's Seth and Becky and AJ and people who can do these amazing matches. There's loads to rave about. So,
and it's also as
if
well,
if you've got a tweet, tweet about the shit that was dope, right? Rather than I didn't like this particular segment of a 3 hour show. Or don't say anything. That's fine too.
But Seth, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, all these people that are now main roster, they should be celebrated even harder, because they came through the same scene that the lads are now coming through.
Yeah.
And and they have changed the product. Yeah. You cannot dispute that. In the last 5 years, that product has changed dramatically. 100%. More to a more...
Sling Finn in there as well, yeah. In changing his style, but keeping Nakamura. Enough of it there.
Yeah. Tell me 10 years ago that Shinsuke Nakamura was going to be a main roster WWE person. Yeah. I'd laughed in your face. And now look at it. And this is the thing with NXT UK, is it's brand new. This is the infancy of this thing, and I think it's going to take a while before that synergy clicks in. But then at the same time, is you think about what Pete has done as champion, that him and Tyler in Chicago, even him and Volta, and there's matches with like the Vets and Mustache Mountain and Jordan, and there is these matches.
The Gallus
in
stuff.
There.
They were all people who. On the early shows, I was like, I'm not into these guys. Yeah. It's not my cup of tea. They've won me over completely. They've been amazing in there, in storytelling, in in-ring and everything. So.
And there needs to be a period of time where they find their thing. Because, I'm not... A lot of people always this idea of me being a big Japanese wrestling fan, and I love Japanese wrestling, but it's over a long period of time, and I don't watch a lot of New Japan these days.
Yeah.
Someone asked me the other day, like, are you going to cover G1? And I don't feel right, because I've not watched New Japan consistently for the last two or three years, or it's, let alone a G1. But that New Japan style's changed dramatically, and trust me, I'm in the... There'll be about two people that will get this reference, but I'm in a Facebook group called Classic Japanese Wrestling, which is like an amazing... forum of nerds. It's brilliant.
There's
people in there that absolutely hate the modern New Japan because it's not what they got into in the 90s or whatever. And it's the same with wrestling all over the world. There'll be people that will hate it. Lucha Libre has changed dramatically because of the likes of Pentagon and
But
and
again,
Rey
it's the statement, it's the fact that it's all in motion is what people struggle to realise. One of the points I made in this Twitter discussion, and to be clear, the guy was lovely. He was polite. He just had his view. It wasn't to his taste. And we were discussing back and forth. And the point I kind of made, because he talked about WWE, and this is something I had on my notes to talk about, because it's just over a year since I really angered the internet wrestling community because I was excited about NXT UK. And I wouldn't acknowledge that the WWE are here to destroy the indies. Yeah. And I think the indies are looking pretty great a year on. But the point there was kind of saying, look, his point was he felt NXT UK have just stolen. He then corrected, he said he feels stolen was the wrong word, but the best bits of the indies and it's not as good. They're not as good here, blah, 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 blah. But my point to him was, imagine, do you think if AJ, Finn, Nakamura, Anderson and Gallows hadn't come to WWE, we would have had Okada Omega.
Yeah.
That whole feud. We would have had Ospreay doing the things he's doing out there at the moment. Zach, another great example. We wouldn't have had that because you have to have this movement within the product. And it goes both ways. When Hogan and everyone left to WCW, it allowed Shawn Michaels and the mid-carders to go to the top, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mm. A few things happened after Cody Rhodes left WWE. You know, that's had some impact. So again, it's the transition is both ways, but it shouldn't be this huge anger and fury.
And I completely agree on that. And I think everything has a knock-on effect. And I think for me, one of the most important things that NXT has done was NXT was an organic thing that grew and built. And really, for me, when I started to love that product was when Sami Zayn and Neville were having that feud over the NXT title becomes mine, and then Kevin Owens came in, and then it started to become...
Literally, the Kevin Owens coming in is when I started watching
and I
was
get
like,
that.
What's going on? Who are these? It's amazing.
But a lot of people got brought into the product because of that. Yeah. And then what happened is we started watching that weekly TV, and then Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, Bailey, Natalia, all the girls started to actually get fair time and an opportunity to show everyone how good they are. And then, you know, that ended with Bailey and Sasha really at Brooklyn and the four horsewomen. And I think that constant movement, that constant evolution leads to these opportunities. And I don't think without NXT, I don't think we would have had an all-female WrestleMania main event. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say I'm not doing that horrible thing of like, oh, well, we've got Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn to thank for that. But it's not at all. It's just saying that these movements and these moments give birth to something else. And yeah. Sometimes it's really, really special. And I think as well with the NXT UK situation is if we've got a situation where people will aspire to go to NXT UK, that's a good goal for them. So when people move up on the indie scene.
And moving up is a positive thing as well, because
yes.
What more could Pete, Tyler and Trent have done yeah. on the indies? They'd yeah. kind of done it all, same with Volta, really, yeah. in a shorter amount of time over here, but mm. he'd come in at such a high level. How much... Alistair Black, I almost dead-named him then, which which I would never do. There's a lot of people like that of, what more could they have done? So surely it's good that they make way for Spike Trevay to be having the year he's having, DOJMO to be having the year he's having, Cara Noir, who we've mentioned, all these other people to come through and fill those gaps, right?
Yeah. And I get it. I do get it. I was a scene
TK
kid.
Cooper and Chuck Mumbo are two that, again, I'd always enjoyed as early in the card people. They're a bit of fun. And now I'm watching them as, wow, these are main event show stealers.
But like I said, I was a scene kid. I had it. Like when all my cool hardcore bands all sold out and got played on Daniel P. Carter's rock show, I was like, you know, I was an idiot when I was 19. And I was like, oh, well, they're dead to me now. I was like, it's not as good as the first album.
Yeah.
And like, it is. It's that's what a community, that's what a scene is. And I completely understand it. And again, it's that thing of, I think it's good that people like you have a healthy discussion.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think a healthy discussion is fine. It's when people resort to being petty. And,
oh, it gets nasty. I said a year or so ago, when I was seen as defending the WWE, people were furious and just being... But it's interesting. It's these developments that bit there of the bands
and
growing out of them. I went on a little... Like, you know when you have those quick routes of a journey of your brain? So I thought of Green Day because I think the thing that's amazing about them is they mean as much to 14-year-old kids at school as they meant to me when I was a 14-year-old kid at school. But it's different albums. Exactly. It's mad. That's an amazing thing. But on Adam Buxton's podcast recently, he had Frank Skinner, and he told a story that he did a gig after a book reading or something at Latitude, and a woman put her hand up to ask a question and said, I used to hate you, but now I love you. Have you changed or have I? Which is a beautiful
question. That's a great question.
Because it's really
so
relevant to wrestling, because it just happens that my favourite period in the history of wrestling is 5 years ago to current NXT.
Yeah.
For me, it's the best thing ever. Yeah. And I was the biggest Ultimate Warrior fan ever. I was loved the Attitude Era. There's all sorts of different points I've had throughout my career. Yet this, for me, is perfect. That doesn't mean it's the best for everyone.
Correct.
That doesn't mean these indie wrestling fans need to love it. I think there's a lot who would love it if they didn't have hang-ups about the owners of the company or whatever, because the product itself, I think, is... It's got the production value of WWE, but it's got the talent and in-ring of indie.
I think that was always going to happen. And knowing, like, to use Jim as the example with this, is that knowing Jim as well as I do, I feel that it was going to be a necessary evil if we wanted to make this thing better, in the sense that to be more transparent and be more open to fans who are absorbing a product. It's that thing of, to use Progress as an example, they open themselves up for taking shots.
Yeah.
Because if you go out there and say like, oh, well, don't be a dick, and you know, you openly talk about what happens behind the curtain, people are always going to use that to snipe at you.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that sometimes that people haven't been justified to snipe, and I'm not saying that they're always right, but it is always going to happen. And it's that thing of accountability within the scene, because the change that's happened within the last 7 years has been, like, so positive. Yeah. Like when I came into wrestling 15 years ago as a 15-year-old, it was one of the most toxic and horrible communities in the world ever. It really was.
Yeah.
Because it was just a bunch of old boys that were still hung up over the old World of Sport days. And it was this horrible, toxic masculinity and this real shit attitude.
And
it was horrible.
The goal had been stripped away. The goal...
Yeah.
TV had been lost. Oh, so suddenly you've been working your whole career towards something, and now that the goalposts have moved completely, or the goalposts have turned into rugby poles.
If you had said to someone like, oh, I'm going to be in WWE one day, that at that period of time, they would have laughed in your face, and I would have told you to leave.
Yeah.
And it's changed from that. I went from wrestling on shows where there was two women's wrestlers, not two women's matches, two women's wrestlers in almost the whole of the country.
Yeah.
And we've gone from that to where we are now, which I feel like is a safer environment and a better environment on the whole. Is it perfect? No, because nothing's perfect. And we always have to keep learning and we always have to keep progressing. But from the state that we were in to where we are now is something that I am proud of.
Yeah.
And I do think, again, it's that mindset of let's try and focus on the positives for the most of the time and then hold everyone else accountable for the other.
Oh, everyone's excited to get angry and be negative about stuff. Again, it's why I reposted the Cara Noir match this morning to say there was some wrestling Twitter dramas yesterday. Mm. You may have missed something great. And it's weird because, again, I also think, I mean, as you said, people have a right to get angry at stuff. That's not what we're saying here.
Yes.
The progress example from yesterday, I'll go through it with my opinion because I wouldn't ask you to comment because you've worked with them and all this kind of thing. But Progress did a tweet that was a photo from the weekend, and it said, finally, the ultimate Paul Robinson face. And it was a woman in the crowd who looked really angry.
Mm.
I think there was nothing wrong with that tweet at all. People reacted badly because they thought they were having a go at the woman in some way. The point of the tweet is Paul is meant to make you angry. Her face was a look of absolute disgust at this horrible person. So it wasn't having a dig at the person anyway, but some people reacted to it in that way. That fuel is then poured on that fire by the heel being heelish.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I don't think Paul Robinson's in the wrong there. He's a heel. He's meant to be saying, oh, look at the state of that fact, or look at the state of it, or whatever it was he said. Then when people react, he reacts back and all this kind of thing. So I think people were right to be reacting because they're being defensive and they're angry and they've been offended.
Mm.
Paul, as a heel, is right to continue being a heel. Progress weren't even intending to be horrible there.
Yeah,
I thought that they did take it down because of the way it was misinterpreted, so I support that. I was kind of sad at that in a way because I was like, no, it's because that's not what was meant there. So now it's been repurposed to mean something it didn't in a weird way, which is odd. But again, it's an example of how everyone can have the best intentions there and be doing the right thing, but it can cause offence and anger. Again, I keep bringing up my girlfriend in this, but she's like, oh, bloody, I hate Elias. And I'll go, you're meant to. And there's a few heels that she absolutely hates. It's like, that means... You know that's why I like them, right? You know, it's because I'm watching going, they're really good at really annoying everyone. And it's
funny because it's kind of like 1996 cruiserweight WCW action in the ring and then 1998 Attitude Era reaction / drama on Twitter now. Yeah, and it's this weird cross between the two sometimes. But
completely.
But look, you know, it's the business. It's the nature of the business, and it'll always be that way. You know.
So let's. I mean, as we've gone over the hour mark, there's two things I want to kind of ask. What roles do you have these days? Because I know you stopped doing Fight Club Pro because you were getting busy elsewhere. I know you're hashtag independent as such. So what are your roles and what are your positions in the industry now?
The Fight Club situation's an interesting one because I've got a million reasons why I decided to leave. And for me personally, I don't think any of them are negative. It was the right time to leave.
Yeah.
I grew with that company. And I came to embody what that company was for the nearly 3 years that I was there. And it was that we were a bit pissed off. It was that we were a bit angry that no one was looking at us, and it was the fact that we were the group of people that kept on getting overlooked and kept on getting forgotten about, and then suddenly found ourselves at the forefront of success. Yeah. You look at that roster, some angry dudes, and there's some stuff that we did. We were doing, and I'm not, you know, I'm not tooting our own horn, and don't think like someone will tell me something else, but like we were one of the first major indies in this country to openly do intergender matches. We had Nixon Newell against Chris Brooks in one of the most violent matches, and we were a company that, and they still are a company that pride themselves on, we don't look at you as a gender, we look at you as a wrestler. We had death matches when people weren't doing death matches with guys like Clint and Jimmy and Mikey Whiplash. We had pure wrestlers like Sabre and Travis Banks. We were the place that were giving all these opportunities to newer people, and we were angry, but we got to a point where we couldn't be angry because we were getting 800 people in a, you know, in a warehouse in Wolverhampton, having some of the best wrestlers. And I think I creatively hit the point where it was the right time to go, and I stand by that. And I've got a real love of ending things in professional wrestling, because nothing ends.
Yeah,
and
it's a never ending story. Is. It's one of the best quotes I ever heard of a Triple H on Jericho's podcast, I think it was, where he said, if you're angry about something, it's a never-ending story. We're going to be back next week and maybe, possibly have faith that we build into something that you're going to like. It's something I always got when I was becoming more and more obsessed with progress, which I still am, was that they'd have everyone in the palm of their hand, then they'd have one result that people didn't like, and there'd be uproar, and it'd be like, maybe trust that they've got a plan for that.
That
there's going to be a payoff, that CCK are going to come back, or this is going to happen, or there's going to be a big pop.
And I kind of, I like being in control of my own destiny. I did Fight Club 100, and I got to do, I think the last official show I did, I went back and did Dream Tag, because there was an opportunity to go and do it. And I like that, because like, I like that I've chose one to do it. And I'm part of, you know, Gaz and Craig own Tetsujin up north.
Yep.
And I've been very fortunate that they're good friends of mine, and I've had a little bit of input in it. And it was this beautiful moment where all three of us were like, we should just kill it. Like, because no one kills their own promotions, and let's do a trilogy and let's name it after one of the most iconic punk albums of all time, and Refused, because we called it Tetsujin's Fucking Dead, which is a Refused song, which is ironically on the album that tore the band apart at their most influential and the biggest. And we kind of went with that vibe because we'd rather people remember it and love it than it staying around for too long. So I think that's kind of where I am with ring announcing. I feel like I've done as much as I can with it. I still do Fighting Spirit up in Liverpool for James Drake and Zach Gibson's training school, and I occasionally do other places. But like, my job now with ring announcing is bringing new people through and giving them the opportunities, because there's people that are coming in behind me now that are awesome and completely different to me. So my main focus is in wrestling, is commentary, because it's the thing that I love and it's the thing I think I'm pretty good at.
Yeah.
Like, so that's kind of where I'm at, but everyone always has this thing of like, I love it when people are like, well, where would you go? And I'm like, I don't know where I'd go, because no one's offered me a job.
Yeah,
Like there's places and stuff that I'd like to do at some point, but at the minute I'm just happy with what I've got, and I'm happy with this stuff that I'm producing, and you know, and don't get me wrong.
And, like, I mean, that's a positive place to be. Like, one of the biggest questions I get is, who would be your dream guest? It's like, look at my guests.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to have all of them. And similarly, who would you want? Where would you want to go? You commentated Devlin Dragunov at the weekend, right? Which everyone is saying is one of the best matches.
Magic. It was actual magic.
Look at what I'm actually doing, rather than what my dream would be. Look at what I'm doing. This is what's exciting.
And that's so important. I think that's so important, because, and I'm guilty for it. Like, of course I'm guilty for it, because I'm a human being, and sometimes I do go, oh, that's really cool, I wish I was doing that. Yeah. And then it's like, but look what I'm doing. There's people that would kill to be in my position, you know, and there'd be people that would just want to do what I'm doing. And more importantly, I'm doing what I want to do, and that's super cool. And I'm in a really fortunate position where I am an independent contractor, and not just in wrestling, in presenting and hosting and all these other things that I do that I equally love. Like, I get to basically wake up in the morning and decide what I want to do. And that's a very fortunate position to be in. So, for, like, the terms of wrestling, I'm in this weird moment of... I'm coming into my 16th year.
Wow.
And so I've been in wrestling half my life.
Yeah.
It's all I've ever known. And it's the only thing I'll ever want to know.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I don't want to be an accountant or whatever, or get a real job. So I'm just really happy and thankful that I'm still here. I'm still doing this, you know.
I love it.
From that stupid, skinny little 15-year-old kid in Wigan not knowing what he's doing to having done Wembley Arena and working for the biggest independent company in the world.
Yeah.
And getting to have my voice featured on NXT UK and doing podcasts and doing video game events and all this incredible stuff that, like, you know, sometimes I'm in the shower and I'm like, bloody hell, that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not all right. Well, I mean, and let's wrap things up on the mark of, I mean, we spoke of knowing when to leave and when to walk away, mm-hmm. and that's where Jim got to on Tuesday Night Jaw. He was messaging me every now and then apologising for not having new episodes out. And my point has always been, look, what you're doing is the most important thing. Like, the stuff he's doing with NXT UK and with Progress and with everything, that's the priority. I never wanted the podcast to be a burden or an annoyance or a commitment as such. So I kind of said to him, would you be interested in handing it over to someone? And you were one of the names I put forward, the first name, in fact. Mm. And he was like, yeah, I think that'd be good. And I think he'd already mentioned the idea to you or something like that. And that was kind of what happened as we recalled this a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
It kind of, the transition was put in, the trade was made.
Yeah.
What's the plan kind of going forward? What do you want to do with Tuesday Night Jaw? Is it...
Oh, I've got some ideas.
Yeah.
It's funny as well, because, like, I've been saying this a little bit in person, but everyone keeps saying congratulations to him, and I'm like, for what? For being in the right place at the right time? Like, cheers.
Again, it's hard work and luck.
Yeah, that's
the
exactly
two things.
It.
It's okay
that's exactly
to acknowledge both. There's a reason you were in the right place at the right time.
Exactly.
But it's also lucky that that happened to happen. But
I think for me, like, my intention is that I really want it to be an open forum.
I just want to pause and say, I just want you to say you've got the job, because it suddenly feels like a job interview. So what's your intention for Tuesday Night Jaw?
What's your five-year plan? Where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
It's yours, so go on, continue. I suddenly felt really kind of, I'm the one who's asked it as the head of the network. Yeah. So, like, you're asking for my daughter's hand in marriage.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. But no, I really want it to be an open forum. And I feel that I have the ability to truly do that when Jim didn't. Because Jim, he has job restrictions, because of course he does. I don't. So I'm fortunate that I don't just want wrestlers, I want referees, I want ring announcers, I want commentators, I want comedians, I want fans, I want everyone that's in this mental community to be able to have a voice and give their story. I just want interesting people to talk about wrestling. That is literally it. If you're positive and you're interested. And again, like, I've got a few guests lined up, and I'm trying to think. I'm doing one today, which will be... not this week's episode, it'll be next week's episode.
So it'll probably be last week's episode when this comes out.
As
such, it's confusing.
And it's a wrestler who isn't to a mainstream audience, and never heard of him. They'll be like, who's this guy? And they're going to look him up and they're going to get excited. But then on the flip side, I'll have Chris Ridgway on when he comes back from doing a tour of Pro Wrestling Noah. We're just going to talk about Pro Wrestling Noah.
Amazing.
I've got John Robinson lined up, who's a mental stand-up comic who does a show called The Dark Room that's influenced by professional wrestling, and he's also been part of the Australian independent scene. And this is it. This is what I want. I don't want it to be, here's a wrestler. Oh, how'd you get into wrestling? Who did he train with? What's your favorite match? You know, and it's nothing. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I want it to be the stories that have happened in wrestling.
Or one of the great changes that I think has been overlooked a bit in wrestling podcasts recently. I keep meaning to tweet about it. When was the last time you listened to Jim Ross's podcast?
Yeah,
it's brilliant now.
Yeah.
The way they've done it, Conrad, what's his, I can't think of his surname for some reason. He sits down with JR every week and they pick a different event that Jim was involved with to analyse.
Like the old Bruce Pritchard stuff.
A lot like the old Bruce one. And it's fantastic now because it's not just Jim talking to a wrestler about their career or whatever else, because there's so many of them out there.
Yes.
And it's fantastic. They've been going through WCW stuff recently. They've done some classic WWE moments. And that's what Jim Ross should be doing.
And this is something else that I want to say. I'm never going to be able to have a 100% critical voice because if I work within this industry and I choose to not talk about certain things and withhold stuff out of respect for the people that I work with and I'm friends with. But that doesn't mean that I don't want that to happen. I want to be able to inspire people to do that on their own. Everyone's got an iPhone or a smartphone. Pick it up, record a podcast, tell us what you think. Yeah. And I'm all about supporting that, because if you truly are in this community, you want everyone else to be able to succeed and do stuff that again. Yeah. And, you know, it comes back to that I, you know, I had it this week of, oh, I'm going to cover the G1. Why should I cover the G1 when I'm a casual fan, when there is someone out there that dedicates their whole life to this tournament and this promotion and it can add so many details and stuff that I can't.
The Bearded Wrestling Fan, is that his name on Twitter? He's amazing. Because I'm tempted for the first time to watch the G1 just because the brackets came out, and it's the first time that I'm familiar with a high percentage of the people in it.
There's people out there that, like, you know...
And he did a blog about it that was just a breakdown of, here's how you watch it, here's who you should be. And he was like, this is great, this is...
There's, like, everyone makes a joke with me on Tuesday Night Draw about being obsessed with Dragon Gate, because I am.
Yeah.
But I'm not the voice of Dragon Gate. There's an actual English-speaking Dragon Gate community out. There's a guy called Jay who's been around for years and used to have the iHeartDG.com website.
Yeah.
And he's phenomenal. I think he actually works with Dragon Gate now. And there's like Galatzo Dan, who's the giffer that talks about Dragon Gate and Shikara, and there's all these other little bits of pieces and people out there that are doing incredible work, and they get me excited about, like, oh, I'm going to watch that. I'm going to watch Chris Brooks put a figure four on a water slide in DDT in Japan.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not my role.
Yeah.
That's their role, and that's awesome.
And that's the great thing as well, because one of the things I love about podcasting, and I was adamant when starting this, when I had my XFM show, in my first meeting in agreeing it, I said, I only want to do this if I'm allowed to say, oh, I heard this track on Zane's show at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I encourage across the network as well, Cunning, that you can be, oh, there's a really good podcast about this, or there's a really good, here's where you can find out more on that.
Yeah.
Give people the option of going down rabbit holes, guide them to the rabbit hole, show them the rabbit hole, and then it's up to them.
I think it's really funny because obviously on this network, we always like shout out everyone else's podcasts.
Yeah.
But we're all big fans of each other's podcasts.
Yeah.
Because Susie's done the CBD Oil this week, which I'm like, I'm listening to it on the train back because, if there's anyone I'm going to listen to and I'm really interested in,
And it's the perfect one to cover about now because there's so many claims on it. Like, literally, I don't remember the last time I had something wrong that someone didn't say, should try CBD oil. I've got a flat tyre. CBD oil is good for flat tyres. Is it?
But it's the same, I listened to your podcast with Charlie Brooker the other week, because I love Charlie Brooker. Yeah, and I mentioned before about when you had Cedric from Out the Drive-In on. I genuinely, for me, I'm like so flattered to be part of this because I'm a legitimate fan. And now I get to have people come to me and get excited about Tuesday Night Jaw, which still blows my mind.
Well, I mean, the most exciting part is now we've sat down and chatted and made it all official, I'll go through the process of adding you to the Distraction Pieces Network WhatsApp group.
I have heard about this.
Which is very exciting.
I'm
so
excited.
It was a weird one because it all happened and I was like, well, Matt should be part of this, but I've not even kind of met and, like, we've not even discussed any of it. And it's like, I don't want to be like putting pressure on them. Here's
gonna,
the group.
Now are we going to have a Triple H handshake photo after a takeover main event?
Genuinely, I was trying to make it along to the Progress, which was the Sunday after the Tuesday Night Draw announcement. I was thinking, what can I take? I was going to bring a suit jacket just to put on, just so we could have a photo just like Triple H is the
pointing, shaking official. Hands. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, well, that's exciting. So I'll wrap things up with, where can people keep up to date on everything that you're going to be posting?
So
it's weird that Jim's face
involved.
Is
yeah.
dead on the artwork. It makes sense that it's still jimsmallman.com, but it's
have you seen the fan art that guy
yes,
called Ben did? Which is
amazing.
Really, really funny because, bless him, he did it as a joke and it kind of sneakily became the sort of unofficial
yeah,
thing.
I love it.
So yeah, I'm on Twitter at M Richards Host. I'm on Instagram as well, but yeah, Instagram, isn't it? But yeah, hit me on that. We're still going to use jimsmallman.com/TNJ for now. And as well as the Acast website.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of where it lands first. Because I did find out that last week that it takes a little bit while to get on iTunes.
Yeah, it's normally quite quick, and particularly, this isn't a dig at Jim, as soon as you become more regular with it,
yeah.
It only takes 10 minutes or so, but yeah, it's
yeah.
Yeah.
So
there
I'm gonna
is
do,
a slight delay.
I'm doing a birthday Q&A episode, which will have been out tomorrow, which is the 10th of July on
excellent.
A Wednesday,
yeah.
And then I've got another guest lined up. I'm really gutted because I was meant to get someone this weekend for the podcast that we might get in future, and we ended up getting really carried away and actually getting on too much to not record a podcast.
Brilliant.
So, gutted.
Brilliant. I love when that was. Well, thank you very much, and it's exciting to have you on the network and part of the team.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Matt Richards. What a wonderful chap, right? I can't wait to see everything he does with Tuesday Night Jaw. As I mentioned in the intro, grab your tickets for the live Tuesday Night Jaw versus Hardest Part of the Ring under the name of Hardest Part of the Jaw at the London Podcast Festival at King's Place. It's going to be fantastic. The guests that Matt is lining up are amazing. So yeah, grab your tickets swiftly. A few things to tell you about. We mentioned Championship Manager or Football Manager, previously Championship Manager, briefly in this. And the end of last week, it was 2 days before my birthday. And I thought, I've got a busy few days still, but I've got a few hours spare. So I'm going to grab the latest Football Manager and pop it on my iPad. So I grabbed it on a Thursday night. At like 8 p.m. And on the Friday at about 6 p.m. I deleted it because I am still far too addicted to that game. I played it for several hours and you know what? I didn't even enjoy it. Like it's still a great game, but I think it's because I knew there's loads of other stuff I should be doing. There's loads of more productive stuff I could be doing. And I was just playing as Millwall and trying to find new players. It's crazy how addictive it is. But let's talk wrestling for a little bit in the outro. A few things I want to tell you about. Number one, a few of my hot takes. In fact, I'm going to get Buddy Peace to add this into the intro because I want to say in the outro, in fact, I'm going to talk about my number one wish in wrestling right now. So you see, you can edit that and put that, and you will have already heard that. I love it. You all love it when I make him do that because I hoodwink you. And you're like, I did hear that, but I didn't know it was edited because he's a beast. Yeah, so my number one wish in wrestling at the moment is that they would move 205 Live recordings to Full Sail because I don't really watch 205 Live. There's a lot of wrestling to keep up on. And in October, when AEW goes weekly, there's going to be even more. But 205 Live has been having some amazing matches recently. Jack Gallagher, previous guest, against Chad Gable was amazing. Drew Gulak against Isaiah Swerve. What's his new surname? Formerly Shane Strickland. I can't remember his surname. And Drake Maverick against Mike Kanellis. All fantastic matches, but they recalled them after SmackDown recordings. And the crowd have just watched the main roster. It's not necessarily, you know, a specific wrestling fan base. It's your more mainstream main roster fan base. And I just think that 205 Live have got some amazing people on their roster. They're putting on some amazing matches. But It's hard to get into when there's so many other options, because the crowd just aren't into it. And if it was at Full Sail, which is where NXT is recorded, it'd be amazing. So I'm urging for that. Speaking of too much wrestling to watch, I'm loving NXT UK at the moment. We touched upon it briefly here. And one thing I wanted to mention, there was a match, opening match, say 2 weeks ago now, maybe three. It was Naam Dar against Kenny Williams. And it was a really good opening match. One of them, I'm not going to spoil it, did a lariat outside of the ring. And it's one of my favourite lariats slash clotheslines. There is a difference, but you know, the name that you may be more familiar with is clothesline, even though this was very much a lariat. Yeah, it was an outside of the ring one, and it was just great. And I think they're doing some really cool stuff over there. That whole show was really good. As I've mentioned, I think in the podcast, Jordan Devlin is just next level. I'll mention now, in fact, the next NXT UK TakeOver Live is in Cardiff on August 31st. And I recommend you all go along and watch that, or watch on the network, because it's going to be amazing. They're genuinely doing amazing stuff. They're doing Tyler Bate against Volta. Dear God. Dear God. You want to be there for that and you want to watch that. A few other things to talk about. Another thing I really enjoyed on NXT, they've been doing their breakout tournament. It's been cool because there's been some people like Swerve and Cameron Grimes, formerly Trevor Lee. What's Jonah Rock's name now? Yeah, there's just a load of really good people from the indies in this tournament on NXT putting on really cool matches, and it's wicked. But the standout for me went out in the first round, but Dexter Lumis, I've never seen him before. I'd seen pictures of him. I'd never seen him wrestle, but dear God, if there's ever a ready for NXT main roster wrestler, from his entrance was amazing. If you didn't catch it, go back and watch that. It's one of the, I think it's the second or third week of the breakout tournament. It will be mentioned in the details. Oh, he was great. All of his in-ring was perfect. His character was perfect. His look is just wondrous. It's cracking. Yeah. Also, last week, it's relevant to this, as Matt Richards has taken over Tuesday Night Jaw from Jim Smallman. In fact, I should mention he's been smashing it. He's had some great guests recently, not just wrestlers. He brought back the return of the Round Table and included James Drake. I almost said Drake Maverick. And that was fantastic. But he's been having referees on and ring announcers, and it's been great. He had Lucy Openshaw in a really good episode last week. He had James Drake and Chris Egan on the Roundtable. He had the OJMOs having one of the best years imaginable in independent wrestling. He had Chris Sharp on as his first guest. Yeah, it's cool. There's some good stuff. But yeah, he's taken over from Jim Smallman, and Jim Smallman announced last week that he's leaving Progress. The 100th show is going to be his last show. He's going to be focusing on his family and NXT UK and just loads of other cool stuff. And it's really exciting, because it's exciting for him to feel it's the right time to walk away from one journey and focus on another. It's exciting for Progress, because John and Glenn are amazing, so they're going to continue to do amazing things there, but it will feel like a new era, as you won't have Jim announcing and in the foreground as such. So yeah, exciting things there. So big congratulations to Jim and everyone at Progress. And finally, I'm not sure when it's going to be out, because I'm so backlogged with guests. I might have to put it out as a bonus episode, but it'll be out at some point. I'm recording an episode with Jack Sexsmith, and Jack Sexsmith means the world to me. I've been a fan of Jack for a long time. I consider him a pal, even though we don't get to chat or hang out too much. But the times I have chatted with him, it's been a joy. And he recently had wrestling taken away from him, as he was kind of in line for title shots at Riptide and all sorts of stuff like that. He's had an injury that has meant he's got to retire. And I want to talk to him about his career, because his career has been an important one. His character is pansexual, yeah, he's just done so much for bringing variation of sexualities, of gender fluidity, of sexuality fluidity, I guess, and just of support and warmth into the wrestling industry and into the forefront, and not in a character where it's being a joke or anything like that. It's really good. So yeah, I want to have a good chat with him, and that'll be, I don't know when it'll be out, but we're going to record that soon. I think that's all I need to tell you about, isn't it? I'm dead excited about AEW. I've not watched any of the G1. I wanted to this year, and I've just been too busy. But anyway, enough of that chat. I'll see you all next week. Oh, who's my guest next week? Let's fill you in on next week's guest. I know I've been recording some of the best podcasts I've ever done of late. The Patreon lot are kind of in on that. Oh, Sarah Pascoe is next week. This might be my favourite podcast I've ever recorded. It's amazing. I've had Sarah on previously, but this was one of the best conversations I've ever had. So, yeah, how's that for hype? It's amazing. Yeah, I'll see you next week. This is now a really long episode because it's a long old outro. See you all next week, guys. Ta-ta!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.